R2-D2 rolled up behind her. The droid's beeps sounding like they chastised her for leaving him behind.
I'm sorry, R2, she said, patting the droid on the dome. Can you scan for any guards? I don't see any. I don't sense any. I only sense patience lying down.
An internal whirring came from the droid, sounds that Mill didn't quite get, followed by droid language that she didn't quite understand. But the rhythm of it told her enough. R2-D2 agreed. There weren't any guards nearby.
I don't think they're guarding this infirmary, she said.
The droid beeped some more, and Mill took slow steps forward.
They might not be guarding any of the infirmaries. Are they doing this to let them recover in peace? Or does the military just...
Her voice trailed off, though R2-D2 waited patiently.
Just not care?
Her pace quickened, and the droid soon followed, the sound of wheels rolling over gravel.
Come on. Let's find out before Anakin does whatever he's gonna do.
Chapter 40. Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Obi-Wan stood in the middle of the courtyard, hands shackled in front of him, a gust of wind whipping through the hair dangling down his neck. Minister Iam spoke in a steady, low cadence, and Obi-Wan committed himself to listening with an open mind, despite the urge to rebut falsehoods or misrepresentations.
Let us remember the recent history between the Neimoidians and the Republic,
the minister said, his voice echoing in the open-air space.
Note that I am not speaking of merely the Jade Federation. I am speaking of Neimoidians as a people. We are often overlooked in that aspect. In fact, let me ask our emissary. When you hear the word Neimoidian, what do you think of?
This was a trick question. Obi-Wan had been in enough negotiations to know that questions like this were verbal minefields, the smartest, best kind of trap, because Iam was correct. Nearly all Republic citizens associated Neimoidians exclusively with the Trade Federation, barely looking past things like shipping routes, particularly for those that worked in the Outer Rim. He wanted to say something about their people, their culture, but the truth was, he'd only read about it the other night. He didn't actually know it. He chose his words carefully.
Independent, he said.
Ah,
Iam said with a hand clap.
I like that. Yes, independent. Neutral, in fact. Immune to the shouting between the Republic and the Separatists. But the problem lies here. You say independent, and while many Neimoidians do work for the Trade Federation, not all of us do. Yet here you associate our people with a government that represents most, but not all. So while the Trade Federation itself is independent, and most Neimoidians support that independence, you have demonstrated one of the fundamental issues here, Master Kenobi. You have linked the two together. Is that because of what the Trade Federation does? Because the Trade Federation's business is commerce itself? Not minerals or technology or vehicles or weapons. Not things Republic leaders can purchase or regulate, but something that acts as an impediment to their reach? Surely, if the Trade Federation produced spacecraft at the volume of, say, Corellia, it would be recognized for something tangible, something you could point to and say, ah, for the greater good of the galaxy. Perhaps that is why the Republic tends to keep Neimoidians at a distance,
and why it is so hard for Nemoidians to be recognized as individuals.
The words sank in, a truth to them that came with clarity. But why spend the opening of this trial discussing history? Obi-Wan's eyebrow rose as he put it together. I am new. Perhaps Senator Dodd knew as well that the galaxy was listening. This, in fact, might have been the most power Nemoidians ever held in a single instance, and they were going to use it to show the Republic exactly how they felt.
Nemoidians have a rich, beautiful culture. Look around us. We are surrounded by it. The intricate carving of the goddesses Aven and Maradane as they tell the unraveled tale. The Tower of Light, as much an architectural wonder as it is a work of art. The Museum of Nemoidian Contributions, the oldest building on Cato Nemoidia, a celebration of how our people's skills have benefited the galaxy. Yet are these discussed in Republic classrooms as they cover galactic culture? Not at all.
The minister shook his head.
To the Republic, we are a monolith, a people of business.
He took another pause, though this time he broke past the facade of calm objectivity. His eyes squinted and his voice rose.
A people of greed, a people of deception, perhaps not even a people.
Minister Ayyam spoke with an orator's rhythm, changing his pitch and pace in a way that precisely engaged with anyone who listened. And though the crowd in the square stood some distance away, they swayed to the rhythm of his words. Obi-Wan sensed their collective grief evolving into a more tangible anger, something that carried enough momentum through the Force to pull his concentration. They sought retribution in some form, someone to absorb their community's pain. He took a quick breath and told himself to focus. Just as the galaxy listened to Ayyam, soon it would be his turn.
Was our tragedy caused by someone from the Republic? We will hear both sides of the case. But one thing that must be considered. What were the conditions that caused such a tragedy to happen that put Cato Nemoidia in the crosshairs of someone else's war? Had the Republic recognized Nemoidians as a people, rather than tools of transaction, would their relationship with Cato Nemoidia and the Trade Federation be different? Would they have enacted greater protections to worlds such as Cato Nemoidia as the conflict unfolded?
Arms raised, he gestured outward, upward, each movement creating another wave of noise from the crowd.
Would Cato Nemoidia even still be a target? As we determine the innocence or guilt of the Jedi Emissary, perhaps this context is even more important.
A wave of noise came from beyond the walls, the crowd's uproar rolling over the structures and buildings around them. The minister waited for the noise to settle, a space for his words to take root.
What is on trial here is much more than a single act of terrorism. Let us hear from the Jedi Emissary.
The judge excused Minister Ayyam, then looked directly at Obi-Wan. A rifle muzzle jabbed into his back, nudging him forward until he stood directly in front of the judge. And though he spoke directly to her, Obi-Wan took great care in knowing that his words were being listened to by governments all across the galaxy. Everything that had happened led to this point, this negotiation.
Obi-Wan considered all of the gears of government across countless systems, how his words might impact chances of either peace or war.
You are right, Minister Iam. History does not lie, and I cannot condone the long-time actions the Republic has made in dismissing the Nemodian people and its colonies time and again. I cannot justify the ignorance, the way the Republic has seen the Nemodians as assets of the Trade Federation, rather than sentient beings. You have every right to be angry. You have every right to want a better life for your people and your children. You have earned your voice as a people and for those represented by the Trade Federation. I understand the need to be heard, but I urge you now. Being heard requires truth and faith in return. So I ask you to judge the truths I will present in good faith. Otherwise, this war will consume us all.
Outside, the mass of hostility gradually trickled into quiet. Obi-Wan hoped the more humble and philosophical tone of his words countered the bluster of Iam. Statements that might spur reflection rather than whip up frenzy. He chose his words carefully, a blanket to drape calm over the storm.
You have lost loved ones. You have lost children. I cannot bring them back. But if you listen to me right now, everyone here, everyone watching this holocast, in the Republic or in a neutral system or aligned with Count Dooku's movement, we have a chance to stop this war.
His last few words projected with emphasis, as if he had said them strongly enough that they could have ordered both sides to put down their weapons.
I repeat, we have a chance to stop this war, so no more lives are lost.
Seconds ticked by, the crowd quieting to a point that Cator Nemodia's winds blew louder than the gathered mass.
I will now detail my findings in full proper context.
Obi-Wan reached out through the Force for any sense of how combustible the crowd was, but grief turned out to be their default emotion, which meant how they took the next part of his speech would be completely unpredictable. He considered his words, so carefully planned, and committed to trusting that the right people would recognize his attempt at good faith negotiation.
I have seen the evidence. I have seen it in my own investigation as well as data gathered by others.
Was Roog nearby? He hoped so. And he hoped what he was about to say met with her approval.
It is true. There is evidence that points to the Republic. The information on the data pad I uncovered was authentic. This bombing's details match materials and protocols used by the Republic. The evidence shows this, and I will not lie for political purposes.
From afar, the clamor of the crowd started again. And Obi-Wan knew that his window of opportunity to make his point would quickly close. He needed to strike with precision here.
I ask you to wait and listen before you judge, because there is more. Further evidence. Evidence pointing to the separatists. Just as the data pad showed materials and protocols matching Republic bombs used by the clone army, I can confirm that Katasura was also attacked using materials and protocols matching separatist laser bombs.
Voices from outside created a communal din, an acknowledgement that things had taken an unexpected turn.
Please, you must see the truth. There is something else at play here, something that is trying to escalate the fighting. Someone or something that is making gains off all our suffering. That is the cause of this tragedy. And the culprit is still at large. Extremist groups are already involved with the war. Your own government has sworn off the actions of Newt Gunray as an extremist faction. And now this bombing, with materials drawn from both sides, and indeed placed to look like both sides, so both the Republic and the Separatists
can fight even more battles, fire even more weapons at each other.
His voice took on a rhythm, something not that different from the soaring pause of Ayab's cadence. But this was not calculated theater. Obi-Wan let the urgency of the moment guide him every word a step toward his ultimate goal.
There is only one solution for all of us, on all sides, de-escalation. And there is only one path to de-escalation. The Trade Federation cannot stay neutral in this war. Neutrality in the face of extremism only gives the extremists more space to breathe. It must be extinguished before more lives are lost, and the only way to stop it is to de-escalate the war. My name is Obi-Wan Kenobi, Jedi Master and Emissary of the Republic, and I have presented the facts to you in good faith. I now invite you to return that good faith. Join me in recognizing this threat. A threat not just to the people of Cato Ne Moidia, but to the Trade Federation and to stability across the entire galaxy. If the Trade Federation aligns with the Republic, we can use this tragedy as a first step to coming together and negotiating peace with the Separatists.
More noise came from the crowd outside, but by now the voices mixed too densely to decipher what type of reaction was playing out. Just that the reaction existed. Obi-Wan gave himself equal odds of taking steps toward peace and throwing an accelerant on the galaxy. If Anakin were here, surely he'd have a witty remark for Obi-Wan to roll his eyes at.
And now we will hear from the Royal Guard of Cato Ne Moidia,
the judge said.
Please present your evidence.
Behind Obi-Wan came the sound of a door sliding open. Boots hit stone, creating an even and steady cadence as the guard entered the courtyard and moved forward. Obi-Wan didn't look. He knew who it would be. Kitar's voice came laced with venom.
This emissary,
he said with an unexpected pious tone,
from the Republic speaks of truth and good faith. And yet here is the truth. Obi-Wan Kenobi of the Jedi Order has come here under false pretenses. He has lied to every single person in this square, every single person on Cato Ne Moidia, every single person mourning a dead brother or sister or child or parent or friend. He is lying to you and cleverly concealing that lie in a truth about the recovered data pad.
The young guard held up the device, its holographic details fully projecting.
This data pad, the one implicating the Republic. And yet, you claim there's further evidence of Separatist materials in the bombing. Where is your source implicating the Separatists?
The pure technical truth was that Obi-Wan wasn't sure. He'd hoped Rug was around somewhere watching the proceedings and acting as a form of safety net for him. But he didn't know the answer to that question, and regardless, he was in no position to reveal her involvement.
I must protect my source. Perhaps if I had a few more days... So!
Kitar said, a certain joy in his interruption.
An anonymous source, no physical evidence, and only his word to go on. Let me tell you something about the word of the Republic.
Kitar deactivated the bomb data holograph, then looked directly at Obi-Wan.
Now our Jedi friend likes to talk about good faith, so let me speak on that. We know that to the Republic, Neimoidian physiology is often misunderstood, often mocked. We know that the Republic sees Neimoidian culture as business assets, sees us as cogs of galactic commerce and nothing else. But all of us here on Cato Ne Moidia know that Neimoidians are much more than that. Every single one of you knows a Nemoidian who is a scholar, or an artist, or a historian, or a philosopher. Nemoidians like my parents, who were artists, in fact. Oh, like many Nemoidian artists, they didn't make their living that way. As much as our society celebrates artists, our reality within the Republic requires our culture's most celebrated to work.
Keitar looked over at the overseeing officials
in expected ways, which they did. They worked to optimize the computer systems that supported transactional databases. But their true passion was found here, on Cato Nemoidia, all the way on the surface. The luminescent oils found on the trees below the mist, they painted with those. A rare skill. That delicate touch to preserve the oil so the glow changes with light and temperature, rather than fading away. When I was a child, they showed me the natural wonders of our planet. Their work was so esteemed in our sector that they were even invited to show it at Coruscant's Festival of Stars. I remember...
Keitar paused, his gaze dropping and voice softening.
I remember the piece exactly. The way the oils lit from black to brilliant colors to white, an ode to the magic of hyperspace travel. Now I'll explain to our Republic emissary. Transporting bioluminescent oil is not easy. That is why so much of this art stays here on Cato Nemoidia. But they were determined. They took all necessary precautions to protect their work from the rigors of hyperspace and atmospheric entry. Yet when they got there, the first Nemoidians to present at such a prestigious event, how do you think Republic officials treated them?
Obi-Wan knew exactly where this was headed, and with that realization, he could feel the screws turning even without the low murmur of the surrounding crowd.
A unique artistic vision only possible by Nemoidians living here on Cato Nemoidia. And on Coruscant, they were given the runaround, even doubted about its authenticity. After all, as you can guess, the Republic only views Nemoidians in one way. And on the third night of the festival, when they were finally given a quiet corner to display their work, it was vandalized overnight.
Keitar's eyes closed, his hands balled into fists. Such a tale had nothing to do with the Katasura disaster, yet Obi-Wan knew that the trajectory of the Clone Wars might tilt on one family's tragedy.
It turned out that those on Coruscant may not know Nemoidian artwork, but they are very familiar with Nemoidian slurs. Slurs that I will not repeat here. My parents left early, discouraged by how Coruscant treated them. And though it's a relatively short trip back to the colonies, they decided to use that extra time to explore other regions they had yet to see, through Republic-protected hyperspace lanes.
Keitar met Obi-Wan's eyes, an unblinking stare that told him how this story ended.
They never came home. Pirates raided their shuttle. In the Republic's so-called law and order, their trustworthy hyperlanes turned out not to be so. Only a single distress call made it through.
He reached behind him and produced a small disc in his palm. His other hand tapped a button on the side and out projected what Obi-Wan assumed to be the family painting. A swirl of dots and lines with colors moving in the most impossible ways. Even in a small holographic form, Obi-Wan recognized its unique beauty. And though shame wasn't a feeling Jedi encountered very often, he distinctly understood it here.
Look at what the Republic promises have done to my family. Their pride, their safety, our stability. The biggest holonet stars in the galaxy get paraded around with armed escorts. Cato Neimoidia's most talented artists? Nothing.
The hologram faded away, Kitar putting the projector back in his pocket.
You may be asking why this matters here, and I'll tell you why. Because we have heard talk about good faith today and all our lives. Good faith?
Kitar asked, his voice escalating.
From the Republic? It has never existed. Never. And now I will give you one very real, very relevant example of this!
The last word came at a full yell, one that caused even the judge to wince.
One last try. Who is your source implicating the separatists?
Kitar's question hung in the air. Enough time passing that the noise from the nearby crowd grew in volume, a sound that synthesized both the venom and the desperation of their anxieties of this moment. Obi-Wan considered his last discussion with Roog. In theory, he could name her. Would that be enough to sway the judge, the crowd, even Kitar? And what would that do to Roog? She'd said herself that helping him put her life at risk. Did he have the right to do that, even with the galaxy at stake? Would he sacrifice Roog for this?
Well, Kenobi?
Kitar asked. He did not. He would not put her in harm's way.
I cannot reveal my source right now. If you give me more time, I'm certain something can be arranged. This Jedi.
Kitar maintained his intensity, hands turning into fists at his side.
Dodges questions, lies about equipment, destroys evidence. He speaks of truth? Here is the truth of Obi-Wan Kenobi. He does not view Neimoidians as equals, and he, like the Republic dealing with my parents, wants all of us to live quiet, inconsequential lives, so that they may abuse us from the core worlds, so they may continue to treat us as assets. He wants the Republic to own Neimoidians, to take away our freedom.
Kitar circled until he stood directly in front of Obi-Wan, then stepped toward him until they were face to face, eyes unblinking.
To that, I say he is guilty of conspiring against Cato Neimoidia, of covering up evidence, of breaking his promises, and of a much larger crime, one that he shares with the Republic. Devaluing every single Neimoidian in the galaxy. I have two words for him in the Republic, and I will speak them not in our beautiful pack, but in basic, in his tongue. No more!
In that moment, Obi-Wan realized the massive miscalculation he'd made. He'd put all his faith in facts, but completely ignored the power of emotion in swaying the masses. No matter what he might have said, what evidence he might have presented, nothing would connect with a mourning people like one of their own, playing to the power of displaced grief. He tried to interject, trying to get something in to express his sympathies, to emphasize the importance of strong galactic relations and stability. But it was no use, and any momentum he had dissipated, absorbed into the roar from outside, one that moved with enough fervor that it nearly shook the ground of the bridge city.
The Neimoidian government is known for its swift and decisive justice, and though some cases require many more days to reach a decision, this particular case is clear.
The judge pointed directly at Obi-Wan, the tips of her ceremonial purple headdress blowing in the wind.
Does the defendant wish to say any closing words?
Obi-Wan adjusted in his boots, his posture straight and eyes clear as he looked directly at the judge.
I have presented the truth.
For hours, he'd crafted his backup plan, playing out every detail and option with the sole intent of not using it. The power of truth was supposed to win out, and its failure caused Obi-Wan to breathe out a defeated exhale. The sheer strangeness of raw emotional swings creating a brief but tangible bout of exhaustion.
And now I put my faith in you. I await your judgment.
Several seconds of silence passed as the judge raised one hand, a calming pause that radiated like a blanket over the proceedings. With nothing to compete against her words, she spoke with a clear and exact diction.
The emissary from the Republic is found guilty of conspiring against the laws of Cato Neimoidia, of being in collusion with the Republic in the tragedy of Katasura, and of attempting to hide evidence of that crime.
Behind Obi-Wan, approaching guards began a rhythmic stomp, and he tensed himself as Kitar walked in front, putting himself between Obi-Wan and the judge. Obi-Wan glanced up at the tall structure where his lightsaber sat embedded in a wall, the so-called Tower of Light, according to IAM.
Take him away to await sentencing.
A far door opened to his left, which he assumed led to a holding cell. And ahead of him, Ventress appeared on the dais. Though she remained slightly hidden behind IAM, she looked directly at him, making eye contact before tilting her head. Then she pointed at the guards closing in behind him. He sensed his weapon as easily as if it sat in his palm. Should he pull it now? No, he thought. Making a commotion now would likely defeat what little goodwill he'd earned in his speech. In fact, it might play into Ventress's and Dooku's plan. Obi-Wan decided to leave his lightsaber for now and go quietly, adapting any plan to what lay ahead. Except the marching stopped. Their steady approach paused, replaced with a single thunk, followed by the clatter of a dropped weapon. Obi-Wan turned to see the lead guard on his knees, hands to his throat. Foam leaked out of the corners of his mouth, and he gurgled before collapsing sideways.
The Jedi has poisoned the guards!
Kitar's voice soared through the space, and Obi-Wan spun around to find Kitar with pistol drawn. And above him, Ventress remained, arm still pointed outward, though she slowly brought it down. The corner of her mouth curled upward and she nodded at Obi-Wan, though he didn't have time to guess at her plan, not with Kitar's weapon drawn.
This is not my doing!
He called out as loudly and clearly as possible.
We need medical assistance right now!
Emergency medical personnel, however, did not arrive. Instead, several further guards sprinted in from the far tunnel.
The Jedi is trying to subvert our security!
Kedar shouted again.
Please hurry! This guard needs medical attention!
Obi-Wan's voice was nearly as loud as Kitar's.
If you release me, I can help stop your lies, Jedi! You are a liar and a murderer!
Kitar's arm stiffened and his eyes narrowed. In that moment, Obi-Wan reached out to the Force, sensing his lightsaber. It was to be a last resort. Pulling it meant unleashing something that could not be undone. He had to choose carefully. From the side came the sound of other guards rushing. Obi-Wan turned to catch sight of them rushing to their fallen comrade, but before he could even take a single step, the sound of blaster fire rang out. The bolt soared past his waist and singed the ground some 3 or 4 meters behind him, burning a gash into the stone. Specks and chips of stone spiked into the air, and a scorched odor hit his nose.
He's making his move!
Kitar yelled. All eyes turned to Kitar, including Obi-Wan's, and Obi-Wan noticed a subtle shift in the way Kitar held the pistol. The young guard changed his angle, so slightly that only the most perceptive observers would take note. As that happened, another guard fell to his knees, choking in a similar way. And just as that happened, two more bolts fired from Kitar's pistol, both landing near Obi-Wan, but avoiding any direct hits. With that, it became clear what Kitar's plan was. Taking out Obi-Wan in front of the guards, the judge, indeed the galaxy via the broadcast, that might fail to rally support to his purposes, whatever they were. But with his scattered fire, the choking guards, and false claims of Obi-Wan's actions, Kitar framed Obi-Wan as the aggressor without any direct combat. And from the dais, Ventress moved, her arm briefly held up in another point before dropping. She turned and disappeared behind Iam and other local officials. The click of rifles unfurled all around him. A quick look saw weapons lifted one by one. And it didn't matter that his hands were still bound. Seconds ago, he'd sought the most peaceful, most diplomatic solution possible. Now, with Kitar's fear and rage driving the proceedings, combat felt inevitable. And it was his duty as a Jedi to redirect that violence in a way that minimized harm to the mourning populace, and indeed, to a galaxy on the edge of ripping itself apart. He didn't want to use it, not in this way. But Obi-Wan knew his lightsaber would be necessary. He shut his eyes and let the Force flow through him, igniting perceptions far beyond his physical senses. Murmurs from the crowd danced like raindrops in an ocean, individual strikes that melded into the greater flow. The energy shackles around his wrists deactivated, circuits crunched through the Force to turn the bindings into dead weight. At the same time, he stretched his senses upward, far up the tower, to pull his lightsaber free. In his slowed perception, another blaster bolt discharged, a burst of red starting to escape a guard's muzzle. Milliseconds after it came the others, a gap that felt like minutes in this state. As this played out, the lightsaber hurtled through the air. It approached, a speed pushed forward through a combination of gravity and the Force pulling it. Obi-Wan's legs tensed, ready to fly straight up the instant he was reunited with his weapon. The vector of the hilt projected in his mind, along with a calculation of how high he would need to vault up after catching it, when to snap his hand open, when to time the arrival in his palm with the immediate move to form a defensive pose. All of that came together in a single instant. A plan ready to execute with perfect precision when something else arrived, breaking all of Obi-Wan's careful timing. Chapter 41. Anakin Skywalker. Obi-Wan sure loved to give speeches, almost as much as he hated flying. Perhaps that was why they worked well together. Whenever Obi-Wan went into negotiation mode, Anakin rushed forward and balanced that with a lightsaber, usually sparing all of them from Obi-Wan's attempts to talk everyone down. Because sometimes talking didn't work. In this case, though, it bought Anakin some time. He'd started in an alley upon parting ways with Mill, then found a good spot to leap up, story by story, until he made it onto a neighboring roof. Though a few citizens took in the trial from the roof as well, Anakin moved swiftly enough behind ventilation ducts and in the shadows of the buildings hanging from the overhead arch to remain undetected. He did make the mistake of peering down over the edge, and while heights weren't anything new to him, those usually came from the building above a surface. Here, Anakin saw the edge of the bridge city and the long drop through the mist. He shook off the flash of vertigo and leapt forward until he got to the side of a building adjacent to the courtyard. From a short windowed ledge behind some decorative flourishes, he watched Obi-Wan finish his speech. A very good speech. In fact, one that would play well on the holonet, before the young guard stirred things into a frenzy. Despite being far above the crowd, their emotional fervor became obvious, the way they moved to every point the guard said. He knew even before it was done that Obi-Wan's speech, as strong as it was, would fail in this situation. And as the guards dealt with the ensuing confusion, Anakin perched himself, trying to tune in to what Obi-Wan was planning. He planned something, though the choking guard clearly swerved the situation, while also dealing with the very practical matter of rifles being drawn and ready. From afar, he picked up a ripple in the Force, not something that he necessarily heard with his ears, but the slightest bit of movement around the nearby tall tower, a site where they'd disarmed a bomb the day prior. It didn't matter, though, because something more critical was about to take place here. Anakin gripped his lightsaber, thumb ready to trigger the blade's ignition, his senses reaching into the Force. He perched behind the ledge, ready to go. In his mind's eye, he could see the blaster bolts leaving the rifles before they physically did. The speed, angle, and exact trajectory which his lightsaber would easily deflect. He leapt a fraction of a second before the first rifle discharged. At that instant, many things happened at once, though Anakin experienced them with slowed perception. His boots landed in front of Obi-Wan, who still had his eyes closed in meditation. His lightsaber ignited, the blue blade coming to full length right before his feet touched the ground. The blaster bolts burst into existence and flew out of the muzzles. And over his shoulder came something completely unexpected. The sound of a lightsaber coming to life. Anakin turned to see what the surprise threat was, only to find Obi-Wan's lightsaber flying toward him at full speed. He swung his own lightsaber to deflect the oncoming weapon, but its rapid twirling velocity caught him off guard. Though he blocked enough of the blade to direct it to the ground, it still nicked him on the side of his right shoulder. "Ow!" he yelled, with less dignity than he would have liked. And as Obi-Wan's lightsaber fell to the ground, its blade withdrawing, Anakin ignored the burning pain and kept blocking the oncoming rifle fire. The mechanical arm again. If his mind and body worked in complete sync, his arm should have deflected Obi-Wan's lit blade right into his former master's hand, allowing them to step into effortless side-by-side defensive combat. Instead, Obi-Wan merely looked at him, mouth agape, while Anakin deflected rifle blasts.
"Anakin, I had a plan!"
"Sorry, Master." The lightsaber blade moved effortlessly, guided by an instinct that both listened to the Force and controlled it. Blaster bolts flew away in all directions, most of them zipping upward to eventually evaporate into nothing. Through all of it, Anakin stayed in control enough to kick Obi-Wan's lightsaber toward him.
"You gonna join in, or do I have to do all the work?"
"I suppose I should say it's good to see you."
The hilt on the ground trembled before flying into Obi-Wan's open palm, its energy blade coming back to life. The back door slid open, announcing the arrival of more guards, and Obi-Wan and Anakin stood back to back, surrounded by the screech of blaster fire and the hum of their whirring lightsabers.
"I make plans without you now, you know."
"That's your first mistake." Despite the hail of incoming fire, Anakin moved effortlessly in sync with his former master.
"You said things always get more complicated when we're together, but they also work better. Battle droids!"
Obi-Wan yelled, the playfulness leaving his voice. Anakin glanced up to see two small floating transports, each carrying 10 curled-up battle droids ready for deployment.
We need a way out.
Do not hurt the guards. Not even the one running his mouth about the Republic. Especially not him.
Anakin wondered just why Obi-Wan would single that particular nuisance out for protection. But that would have been discussed after everyone stopped shooting at him.
Cover me, then follow me.
You're giving the orders now, Obi-Wan said, lightsaber swooping left and right with precise motions.
You're gonna have to learn to trust me.
I always welcome new experiences. Just a few months ago, the exact same words could have been exchanged between Anakin and Obi-Wan, either in a quiet moment or in the heat of combat. But they would have been laced with condescension and resentment. Somehow, this change in rank, this balancing of roles, this recognition of each other, transformed their verbal jabs from bitter conflict to friendly competitiveness. Were they still the same people, just addressed differently? Those were things for Obi-Wan to ponder. All Anakin knew was that he preferred the version of Obi-Wan with an actual smile to the one with a perennial frown.
Try to keep up!
With his left arm, Anakin gripped his lightsaber and reached back before hurling it toward the landing battle droids. The clicks and whirs of their deployment sequence were interrupted as the lightsaber flew in an arc launched by human muscle and guided by the Force. Anakin bent the trajectory to his will, and he didn't need to look back to confirm that the spinning blade sliced precisely through the clump of battle droids. The hilt snapped back into his gloved palm, mechanical fingers gripping it before he changed hands and pointed to the way he arrived.
That way! We're going up!
The Force powered him through, a short instant burst carrying him across the courtyard in a blink. He launched upward, landing on the same ledge he'd used to creep into the scene. He twisted behind the ventilation duct and knelt down, and a second later, Obi-Wan was next to him. Another transport flew overhead, landing in the courtyard before the sound of more unfurling battle droids came. The young guard's voice echoed throughout the space.
Where are they?
He screamed.
Find them!
Roger, Roger.
A mechanized voice stated.
Well, I suppose Master Windu will know where I am now, Anakin said. Don't worry, I didn't contact the Jedi Council. He called me, or tried to anyway.
You came on your own?
Sort of. I have help.
The clank, clank, clank sound of the battle droid's rhythmic steps started.
Activate scan boosters.
They'll find us soon, Obi-Wan said. We need to move.
Yeah, Anakin said. I'm working on that.
He squinted, first doing a visual scan for any signs of Mill, then tapped into the Force to bring him greater details.
You know, I'm going to start tracking how many times I've saved you. Today, the nest of Gundarks, the Moganite bounty hunter and Vased?
Obi-Wan adjusted, looking around the corner.
I'll have you know that being captured by that swoop bike gang was entirely part of the plan.
Like here?
If you paid attention today, I was on my way out of here. You, in fact, bumped into my lightsaber. So this doesn't count.
He glanced at the charred line on Anakin's sleeve.
Are you all right?
Me?
Of course.
He flexed his arm as proof.
I'm always all right. Aren't we all?
Obi-Wan said, his voice softening before returning to its normal spark.
Well, where to?
I'm looking for... Anakin considered his words here. At some point, he'd have to explain the fact that he took a youngling on this particular rogue journey. But those complications could wait. They had to get out of here first.
My partner.
Your partner?
Yeah. You'll like her. Her name's Mill.
He closed his eyes, reaching into the Force, searching for her presence. Though they hadn't known each other that long, their shared experiences had built a bond tangible enough to identify, even from a distance. and while he failed to pinpoint her exact location, her presence acted as enough of a beacon to get a general direction.
That way. Let's take the rooftops and stay as stealthy as possible.
We have a ship docked on the outskirts away from the primary transportation hubs. She's finding the best path to it.
No, wait. I need to find my partner.
They hesitated. More floating platforms of guards and battle droids arriving. Orders were shouted in a variety of directions, and the sound of battle droids unfurling echoed throughout the space. Anakin turned, only to find Obi-Wan scanning the horizon.
Who is this?
Her name is Roog. She's an Amoidian god.
An Amoidian? Helping their civilians is one thing, trusting them is another.
Anakin, let go of your feelings about them. She's former Special Ops. I have full confidence in her. We've been working together. You will understand if we cross paths. Except I don't see any sign of her. She is, he said with a small head shake. Very good at hiding, though. It doesn't matter right now. I need to change your plan.
Are you trying to pull rank on me?
Obi-Wan shook his head, his mouth forming a thin line under his beard. Our investigations have shown that this bombing had both Republic and Separatist ties. There's no simple solution, and I suspect something much worse at play here. But to prove it, we need to recover the evidence from the Cato Neimodian data archive. We can't leave without it.
He looked at Anakin, a gravity in his eyes that Anakin had rarely seen.
Anakin, you must believe me when I say that the balance of the galaxy is at stake. If we get this evidence, if we expose the fact that other parties are exploiting the Separatist conflict, we may convince both sides to stand down and negotiate before it gets worse.
Obi-Wan, he said with a gentle nod, you don't have to convince me. I heard your speech. You should go into politics.
Obi-Wan's neutral scowl changed, tilting into a full and rare grin. I hope to give far fewer in the future, once we get that evidence.
Anakin pointed toward a rooftop path, several buildings in a row of various heights that offered little challenge to force wielders. Any bystanders would have seen silhouettes leaping from ledge to ledge, building to building, moving so swiftly with billowing tunics that they may as well have been Cato Neimoidia's native birds in flight. At the peak of a rotunda, Anakin put a hand up and they remained perched while he once more tapped into the force to search for Mill.
Give my partner a minute. She's supposed to send a signal when ready.
He tracked Obi-Wan's gaze to the now distant Capitol Plaza, noise from the square still audible.
In the meantime, there's something I need to catch you up on.
Chapter 42. Roog Quanum.
Height. Cover. Clear lines of sight. Those were the only things Roog needed. She'd done enough sniper coverage in her time with the Neimoidian Special Forces to adapt to whatever her environment presented. In the case of this trial, Roog chose the Tower of Light, the landmark close to where she'd apprehended Obi-Wan. She broke into the bottom floor. Offices that had nothing to do with the tower's architectural significance as a standout example of Neimoidian cultural achievements. The service lift took her up most of the way, then back stairs brought her through various maintenance levels and storage. She'd finished the final leg through unofficial means involving an ascension gun and old-fashioned climbing. She knelt, legs twisted to brace herself in a steady position as she assembled the deconstructed rifle from the case on her back, something she used to stay inconspicuous among the public. Extensions and modules twisted and locked into place, things she'd customized over years to adapt to her grip, her posture, the specific length of her arms, and her evolving armor set. The small power pack hummed to life and she shut one eye to stay focused on what her scope showed her. First, Obi-Wan. The poor Jedi Master, he really tried. And she warned him, not out of any bias, but out of pure practicality. She understood the reasons that drove him, the need to intervene before any further disasters might accelerate the war. And here he was, trying to turn evidence of a mysterious third party into a plea for peace. Admirable, noble, and in many ways quite logical. But it would fail. He continued his speech, a clear and genuine desperation in his statement. But that wasn't why Rug knelt in her position. She zoomed out, then surveyed all around, checking for any signs of disturbances or trouble. Most of the square's blue-clad crowd watched the nearby holoprojection in perfect stillness, their collective mourning over recent events drawing their attention to Obi-Wan in a way that tilted the scales against him. But at the back of the square, one figure moved through the dense population. Worn rags draped over the figure, though it moved with purpose, a strength to each step that made the outfit a clear disguise. As it turned, Rug zoomed in enough and captured a frozen image on her scope to reveal a human male, hair on the verge of shaggy, and determined eyes that stared in a way different from Obi-Wan. Her curiosity kindled at the mystery figure, except her attention got pulled back to the trial, Keetar now taking full attention. She zoomed in her scope, watching his mouth tremble and eyes squint, his hands turning into fists at his side as he recounted his family's woes. She understood his anger toward the Republic, and in many ways it felt justified, but not this way. Rug's fingers flexed as she adjusted her grip on the rifle, scanning space again. In the corridor right outside the courtyard, a line of guards approached, standard issue weapons in their hands. And in the distance, floating platforms appeared on the horizon. She zoomed to reveal the shape of battle droids curled up in storage positions. Obi-Wan would be found guilty. Through no fault of his own, he'd already been judged. She heard Keetar challenge Obi-Wan to reveal his source, to name Rug, but she already knew he wouldn't. As she tried to explain, people like her created the truths that people like him defended. Rug wasn't afraid to lose her life. She wasn't afraid to be named, even to reveal her own sources. Who'd sliced into the Cato Neimoidian archives to analyze the data? Not if it could tilt the axis of the galaxy. But she'd seen enough to know that it really wouldn't have made much of a difference, outside of some extra shouting by different parties. Everyone's fate had already been decided. That was the difference between someone like her and someone like him. Obi-Wan Kenobi was too good for a galaxy at war. And then the most unexpected thing happened. A guard started choking. Obi-Wan's frantic look, Keetar's drawn pistol, and all of the ensuing chaos showed that something was going awry. And on the dais above them, Ventress departed swiftly, disappearing through a back exit. Rug pulled back the stock on her rifle, prompting a hum that warmed up the internal heat regulating system for high-powered sniper bolts. As she did, Keetar yelled loud enough to echo to her perch, and guards drew their rifles at Obi-Wan. Sharp winds blew around her and at her from the small ledge, and while her boots ground into the ledge to keep her steady, a crackle came from the stone just below her. She pulled away from the scope for a glance and saw something. That clever Jedi. Kenobi's laser sword. It rattled in its lodged hideout, powered by those magic Jedi powers, then leapt out and flew through the air with unnatural speed. Rug tracked it with her scope, a clear trajectory toward Obi-Wan's hand. Then everything happened at once. Guards opened fire, the mystery figure somehow vaulted in and landed in front of Obi-Wan, sword blazing. Obi-Wan's own weapon ignited in midair before hitting the ground. Battle droid carriers landed. Keetar screamed, an incomprehensible jumble of fury that projected at a volume loud enough to capture his emotion, if not the specifics. Rogue Scope dodged around, trying to take in the chaos, though by the time she zoomed out, something had sliced the battle droids in half, and the two Jedi had departed. The guards swiveled around, ill-equipped to deal with the speed and capabilities of Jedi, and Keetar stomped around the space, waving his pistol and shouting at anyone who might listen. Because the Jedi were gone. Roog zoomed out even further, then looked for any kind of movement that might give away where the Jedi hid. Then, in the upper corner of her scope, she saw what looked like a blur whizzing across the view. She tracked it until they paused, holding her hand steady to keep the view clear as she adjusted the view to bring them in. There they were, Obi-Wan and his Jedi partner. Roog blinked to make sure she actually saw what was unfolding correctly. Were they laughing? Another sound came whooshing across. A small fleet of Seekers that must have detected the movement along the rooftops, likely from their advanced surveillance processors. They pursued in a V-shaped formation, priming up the small cannons that the Trade Federation added themselves. Behind them sailed in two floating platforms of battle droids, and even as they followed at full speed, the droids began to unfurl into standing position. Two blue blades appeared as Obi-Wan and his apprentice stood back to back, lightsabers swinging in precise motions, nearly too quick for Rogue's eyes. She'd seen a lot in her time, but never a Jedi Knight involved in full-on combat. And the stories of their frightening martial abilities with their legendary weapon proved to be true. This was far different from Obi-Wan's escape at the hearing. And yet the sheer volume of blaster bolts eventually chipped away, switching the momentum as the battle droids joined in behind the drones. As the battle droids closed in, the Seekers elevated, creating different angles of attack against Obi-Wan and his companion, dodging in quick jerks against the Jedi deflections. If there was a time for Rogue to act, it would be now. She lined a single Seeker into her sights and took in a breath, then pulled the trigger. Chapter 43, Obi-Wan Kenobi. The blaster bolt flew in from far above, though the force slowed down his perception enough for Obi-Wan to track it. It soared from an unknown origin to its collision point, absorbing into one of the airborne Seekers and overloading it into an explosion. Rogue. Two more shots came, their echoing bursts crackling through the air. A pair of Seekers burst, smoke trailing them as they dropped. Then four rapid-fire shots, each taking the heads off battle droids. A sliver of opportunity presented itself, enough that a few precise blaster deflections managed to tip the scales in their favor. Though Anakin probably would make a comment later about how he had it handled anyway. And true, Anakin had gotten out of worse cases before. But every situation came with its unique circumstances, and just because one had escaped a jam before, it never provided any guarantees for further victory. A sliver was, however, all Anakin needed to turn a slight advantage into a decisive victory, and within seconds, the smoking remains of battle droids lay before them, some still trying to communicate with the central command in their distinctive lifeless cadence. "No, you don't," Anakin said, twirling his lightsaber before stabbing downward. "What was that?" he asked, pointing in the direction of the sniper fire. Obi-Wan looked at the tower, pausing to appreciate its architecture with attention he couldn't give earlier. It was a marvel, a melding of structural impossibility and artistic genius, from the way that it curved at angles that seemed physically impossible to the ornate carving that told one long story of their culture's creation myth. And, it turned out, a good sniper position. One that, according to Anakin, had nearly been destroyed by a planted bomb. A gesture of good faith. Obi-Wan put up a hand and held it for several seconds. Whether or not Roog still watched, he wanted the actions honored. Anakin knelt down, inspecting the remotes. Standard Seeker technology based on Irakid models. But these carried specific augmentations to attach weapons to the sensors. He picked up one of the pieces, squinting into the gaping blaster-caused hole and the exposed wiring underneath. So consumed by the inspection that he nearly jumped when Obi-Wan put a hand on his shoulder. "Anakin," Obi-Wan said, and Anakin's posture immediately set for a defensive statement, an ingrained reaction to all the lecturing rained down on him during his Padawan years. "Sorry, Master. Trying to see what we're up against. In case I am genuinely thankful you are here." Obi-Wan's voice came out soft and genuine, and despite the chaos of the situation, he marveled at the grown man in front of him. How everything since Geonosis both stretched time out and compressed it into an instant, changing both of them. For once, Anakin was left without an immediate rebuttal. He turned from the damaged droid in his hand to look out at the horizon of Cader Neimoidia's capital, the missing section from the fallen Katasura district visible from their location. As if on cue, a flare went up near the industrial quarter. Anakin pointed to it and nodded before bursting forward.
"Well, don't thank me yet!"
The remaining Seeker body clanked on the ground, debris spitting out from its damaged body upon impact.
"That's my partner. We should go."
Obi-Wan looked at the area with the flare, then considered the tower where Roog's cover fire originated.
"That tower was the bomb target?"
"Yeah. And six more. Non-military targets. Non-financial targets.
If it doesn't affect their strategic defenses or economic standing, why target them?"
Voices shouted from the floor level beneath them. Both Anakin and Obi-Wan ducked down, leaning out only enough to see guards fanning out, followed by the heavy footsteps of super battle droids.
"Let's move," Anakin said, turning.
He took several steps forward, but then stopped.
"Come on, what are you waiting for?"
Obi-Wan knew Anakin was right, and they should go. But figures broke into view. Kitar, pistol drawn and looking all over for something to shoot at. Behind him, a fleet of guards and further battle droids. He squinted and looked above them, searching the skyline for any sign of Roog, when he felt Anakin grab his arm, completely focused on the path ahead.
"We need to go now."
With luck, Obi-Wan wouldn't need to find out the answers to those questions.
"Right, right,"
he said, and together with Anakin, headed out with some measure of force-assisted speed. On the move. They ran across rooftops, vaulting over exhaust stacks and sliding down slanted terraces, occasionally stumbling into people on balconies while making their way toward the flare. Every few buildings, a Seeker or two would float up, alerted by their presence, and whoever was in the lead waved a hand, crushing the remote's guidance system and internal processor. Each time they turned at a hard angle, leaping to a different building to throw off any potential trailers. As they ran, Obi-Wan relayed Roog's story, including her finding of the Separatist evidence. In return, Anakin paused to point out each of the bomb targets. They jumped, a constant momentum forward as they moved over and around the obstacles in their way.
How precise was each bomb's construction and placement?
Sloppy,
Anakin said, arms gripping a ledge to climb.
The wiring was a little loose. The explosive material wasn't packed tight.
Obi-Wan shook his head as he followed suit. It can't be the same bomber as the Katasura disaster. The details showed military expertise. We ran simulations.
Well, your speech about extremists. A copycat bomber?
Dooku's agent. Obi-Wan mused aloud. What role does she play in all this?
There's not much intel on her, Anakin said as they moved quickly. The clones know more of her than about her.
They reached a ledge, a marked difference from the intricate designs of Zara's capital area and surrounding commercial district. Instead, the farther they pushed to the edge, the more the structures changed into more utilitarian architecture. This pattern continued as dashing across rooftops became simple runs over flat surfaces, and getting to the flare's origin became a tour into the parts of Cato Neimoidia no one ever talked about. It all felt functional, likely a place for manufacturing and storage, warehouse rows and several buildings of high rises. Through the Force, Obi-Wan sensed an array of beings in them, and logic put together that these were the poor and working class of the planet, a mix of Neimoidians and off-world beings who served the ruling class of Zara. No matter how rich a planet or society, someone always had to do the grunt work. They moved swiftly to the edge of the rooftop, and immediately below, the open space filled with large tents, the makeshift infirmaries that supported the ill, injured, and rescued from the catastrophe.
I don't see any guards, Obi-Wan said.
Not even battle droids.
But keep an eye out for any of those seekers.
I don't think we'll encounter any. My partner was supposed to find us a low-security area.
Anakin pointed to an alley between buildings, a short hooded figure standing there. And behind her in the shadows, the distinct red, blue, and white lights from R2-D2's dome.
Good to see an old friend.
Better yet, Anakin said. An old friend that can transmit your data to the Republic.
Let's figure out a way to get him to the data center.
He leapt down and sprinted over to the hooded figure before Obi-Wan could reply. An instinctive exasperation prompted a quick sigh before Obi-Wan decided to follow Anakin's lead. Would Anakin ever not do that?
Chapter 44. Anakin Skywalker.
Anakin wanted to beat Obi-Wan to the alley. Not because it was a race or anything along those lines. This represented a more practical need. He landed on the ground, then rushed over into the alley where Mill stood in the shadows. R2-D2 shook with beeps of greetings before rolling forward to greet Obi-Wan. That gave enough time for Anakin to connect with Mill.
Listen, I haven't told Obi-Wan about you yet.
What?
Mill asked. Her eyes grew wide under her hood.
Am I going to get in trouble? He's on the council.
Hello, R2. Glad you could come help us out.
Chirps and whirs came from the droid in return.
I heard. You're quite the bomb finder.
Are you...
Anakin didn't need the Force to detect Obi-Wan's eyes turning their way. He stood up, back still to his former master. And by now, Mill had to be close enough to give away who she really was.
A youngling?
Mill looked up at Anakin, and Anakin responded with a nod. The young Zabrak removed her hood, and in the low light of the alley, the silhouette of her horns and ponytail became clear.
Anakin.
Obi-Wan's voice turned into the familiar scolding.
What are you thinking? This is no place for a youngling.
Master. Anakin started before intentionally pausing and regrouping, stifling his instinct to argue. Obi-Wan. Some time ago, Such a switch could have been construed as a sign of disrespect. But here, his quieter voice projected different intentions. He addressed a colleague now, without the formality required with a mentor. And Obi-Wan's face softened. The harsh lines, ready to unleash another lecture about protocols and safety, loosening up into a willingness to listen, if not necessarily understand. "This is Jedi Initiate Mil Alabeth," Anakin said. "I know it seems strange, risky for her to be here, but I'm asking you to trust me on this." Mil moved beside Anakin, standing with straight shoulders and tall chest. "She's quite capable." Obi-Wan's brow crinkled in concern, as Anakin had seen so many times before. But it usually preceded a sigh of exasperation, followed by crossed arms and a shaking head. Those reflexive motions didn't arrive. Instead, Obi-Wan stood in simple contemplation, focus moving between Anakin and Mil. "You are a Jedi Knight now for a reason," he said, his words even and careful. "I will defer to your judgment." His head tilted, a smile sneaking through. "I see you learned something talking to all those younglings." "Don't worry," Anakin said. "No way am I taking on a Padawan." Several toots and blips came from R2-D2, the astromech droid bouncing back and forth. "Understood. We'll hurry," Anakin said. "Mil, what do you have for us?" She took a step forward, her facade of confidence melting away back to the same